In July, the Michigan Supreme Court voted 5-2 to strike down parts of state law regarding sentencing guidelines, making them advisory rather than mandatory. Judges will now decide on a minimum amount of prison sentence range. The One Book, One Community program in East Lansing and at MSU this year is focusing on prison issues, such as the death penalty and life sentences for young offenders. Tonight, there will be a panel discussion on mandatory minimum sentencing requirements. That forum starts at 7 o'clock at the Broad Art Museum in East Lansing. The program will be moderated by one of our next guests. Hugh Clark, Jr. is a 54A District Court judge in Lansing. He joins us now. Welcome to Current State, Judge Clark.
Good morning. Thank you.
And we're also joined by MSU Criminal Justice Professor Christopher Smith, who is one of the panelists discussing mandatory minimum sentences this evening. Good to have you with us.
Thank you.
Judge Clark, what does it mean to a district court judge, such as yourself, to have the Michigan Supreme Court give you more leeway in sentencing?
Well, as a district court judge, that doesn't really affect us, because most of our sentences, we see very few mandatorily required sentences in the district court. This has a larger effect on circuit judges who are dealing with felony offenses. Now, I will say we have one or two under local ordinance, but this decision is, it's a continuation of the conversation and discussion that's gone on since their initial inception, the sentencing guidelines by the state of Michigan back in the mid to late 90s. Is it advisory? Then it becomes mandatory. I say now we're back to advisory, and I certainly, as a practitioner for over 30 plus years, you know, I had to deal with this issue.
Well, Chris Smith, what are the problems that have been discussed here regarding mandatory minimums that are a part of this conversation?
I think there are several concerns. One is, when you have mandatory minimums, you'll have individual cases that I think people throughout society are shocked and have a consensus view that that's too much punishment for, say, a first offender for a nonviolent offense. But mandatory minimums really reflect the politics of the justice system. And when you have elected officials and legislatures looking at an intractable problem like crime, and they feel, you know, what can I do about this? The public often wants to hear that they're doing something about it. And the easiest thing to do is to keep making punishments more and more severe. And given that the public often doesn't have an accurate sense of what's going on with crime in society, for example, people have this perception very often that it's going up and up and up. And in fact, it's been cut in half nationwide, violent crime, in the past 20 years. Mm-hmm. So it's a politics based on belief and symbolism, and is not necessarily connected to what one would say is good evidence-based policy.
Mm. Anything to add to that, Judge Clark?
I wouldn't. I don't disagree with that. I think that's been the genesis of this. Is, you know, as our country evolves, as years go by, it's almost like a pendulum that goes back and forth, and people get to a point where they're like, well, we're sick and tired of crime, and lock them up. We got to have tougher sentences. We have to have longer sentences. They have to serve the actual minimum of the sentence. And you know, it's understandable how people get to that point, but the real problem with that is twofold. A, does that help? You know, when you're putting them in an environment where they're with other folk of similar crimes and they're learning more about it and you're hardening the criminal. But number two, and more importantly, is the cost. And I think people are beginning to realize that with these mandatory minimums, that people aren't getting out on parole at any shorter period of time, and it costs more to lock people up and to have them locked up longer. So now you have to build more prisons. And if you build more prisons, they're going to jail more people or imprison them. And it just kind of keeps going. The cycle keeps going. And so to the extent that now I think Michigan's back to talking about it, they just opened privatized a prison over in Lake County, if I'm not mistaken, for juvenile offenders. And, you know, we see some of the issues when you privatize services within the prison industry, and we've just seen that with the food service.
Mm-hmm. Can we trace this to the, I'm led to believe we can trace a lot of this to the drug challenges going back to the 1980s and maybe the 1990s. Chris Smith, is that your understanding? Is that the genesis maybe of this challenge?
Well, it's partly drug challenges, but it's also largely perceptions about drug challenges, mm-hmm. because we often have frightening stories about, you know, the crack epidemic or what have you, and how do we react to those kinds of things? And sort of thinking about tying this to the one book business, you know, the racial impact of what has happened with sentencing has been somewhat staggering. And you can look at the rhetoric related to the so-called crack epidemic, where the response was, let's make sentences mandatory and longer, and compare that to the rhetoric of the meth epidemic, which is primarily white users, and you see all this talk about we have to invest in treatment programs. And you can also get a sense that underneath this, we see some racial assumptions and disparate treatment that impacts where we've gone.
MSU Criminal Justice Professor Chris Smith, along with District Court Judge Hugh Clark Jr., are our guests today on Current State. Tonight, they are both on a panel talking about mandatory minimum prison sentences at MSU's Broad Art Museum. We've had members of the Michigan Prosecutors Association and members of the law enforcement community on this program. And as you might expect, they offer up a combination of caution, if not resistance, to some of these proposals. Have you heard valid points raised from prosecutors and members of law enforcement regarding minimum sentences and the caution that maybe we ought to exercise moving forward?
Well, I can say from my experience as a practicing criminal defense attorney, clearly law enforcement is in the arrest them, lock them up mode, okay, for a lot of offenses. Because, you know, look, there's some offenses that, you know, you really could give some people a warning on. But I think if we go back to what this decision in Michigan, People versus Lockridge, it's a 2015 decision, as you pointed out. What the court said there, and the issue they had, is that Michigan has this legislatively enacted sentencing scheme, and it requires the trial court to make certain findings after the jury has reached its decision at sentencing, that they use in determining the past history and the circumstances of the crime. Now, some of this information may or may not, and generally has not gone in front of the jury. And using this information to score the defendant's mandatory minimum sentencing range, okay, they found violated the Sixth Amendment rights of the defendant, the right to have counsel. Because, again, these factors are being determined, and it may be beyond anything admitted by the defendant or found by the jury. Mm-hmm. And there's a U.S. Supreme Court case, Alien versus United States, that they followed that has led this. So that's why we have that in Michigan. So that's why they say now the guidelines are advisory. They were mandatory as to, well, yeah, let me just break it down. In Michigan, we have what's called indeterminate sentencing. If you're convicted, say, of a larceny building, that's a 10-year maximum. When you're sentenced, the judge has to impose on the top end the maximum. He's required by statute. It is that mandatory minimum where the issue comes in that they have to impose based on the guidelines. So after the judge scores you, they look at a grid and see where you are. So if your mandatory minimum range is between 36 or 42 months, your minimum sentence has to be within that range. Now, the judge can go up or down for substantial and compelling reasons, but they have to state that on the record. So your sentence might end up on the low end at being 3 years to 10. But that three is a mandatory minimum. You must serve the three before you're eligible for parole consideration.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Other than that, I don't believe this is going to affect mandatory minimums like a felony firearm, which is a mandatory minimum 2 years in prison, and you serve that time before you serve any time for the underlying crime. So if you committed a robbery and you got convicted of armed robbery and felony firearm, you'll do the 2 years flat on the felony firearm, then you start the armed robbery sentence. It won't have any effect on people convicted of first degree or felony murder, because that's a mandatory life in prison, no probation, no parole. So for those people who, you know, I won't say fans of that or support that theory, that stays. It's just this sentencing on this mandatory minimum end, which the judges is now, it's not mandatory. I mean, it's back in flux. And it's going to take, I think, a while for judges to get a good handle on it and figure it out. So I'd say you're going to see a little more litigation on this.
I want to ask both of you what you whether you think race has played a role in mandatory minimum sentencing. Chris Smith?
I mean, we can identify an impact with respect to looking at drug sentencing. You know, in the federal realm where crack, cocaine had these staggeringly long sentences, but powder cocaine was much, much less, even for the same amount of the same substance. And you had situations, there was a case in the Supreme Court where the Los Angeles U.S. attorney was only prosecuting black defendants for crack cocaine, never a white defendant. And you end up then with really disparate effects. Now, is that, I mean, to say it's a conscious effort, I mean, I don't think you want to go there without proof. But, you know, there's a lot of implicit bias in society. There's a lot of stereotyping that goes on in society. And it certainly seems to reflect and exacerbate those kinds of things.
Judge Clark is an African-American. I've got to ask your perspective on that.
Oh, I don't. Well, be I African-American or not, I think at the end of the day, you cannot exclude race. You cannot exclude socioeconomic background, which would include persons of all races. I think the reason that they came out in Michigan and perhaps other states enacted mandatory sentencing, at least these guidelines, because it was their effort. It was they were looking to try and standardize sentencing across the state. Clearly, you know, if you have someone from an inner city who's charged with one offense and has a similar background, excuse me, as someone of a different ethnic race from a highly affluent community, a lot of times those sentences were different. Particularly, you know, again, I'm not talking about the robberies or the sexual or criminal sexual assaults or homicide cases, but we're looking at larcenies or drug cases, possessory cases. Clearly, there was a difference.
You've practiced law for a good long time. You've served on the bench for some number of years. I have to ask, have your attitudes changed? Was there a time in your career when you were, quote, tougher on crime than you are today? Have your views changed?
Well, I wouldn't say my views have changed. I mean, there are a lot of reasons that I don't know that any of them are really good reasons why you would want to be a criminal or go out and commit a criminal offense. But I see more of it now, and I get, you know, I have more of a understanding of how people find themselves in that situation. But still, as a sitting judge, my job is to, I look at it as I have to be fair. I'm not going to treat anybody any different than I treat anybody else. And I pride myself on that, and I think not only if you ask lawyers, but the one feedback I get from people who've been in my courtroom through as defendants, I hear this from people, is that they all say, you know what, he sent me to jail, or he was rough on me, but he was fair, okay? And I just go right down the line with that. It doesn't matter your ethnic background, doesn't matter socioeconomic, doesn't matter your gender. I'm going to be fair, and I'm going to treat everybody similarly situated the same way.
We have less than a minute, but I want to get this out there. Another impending legal development. Next month, Michigan's Indigent Defense Commission will vote on whether to recommend stricter standards regarding indigent defense, basically strengthening standards involving the defense of poor people who are accused of crimes here in Michigan. How closely are you following this, Judge Clark, and what do you make of it? Are reforms necessary?
Well, what you need, what you really don't have is a training. There's no training for lawyers coming out, going into practice, who want to do criminal defense work. A lot of times what we're seeing now, you have three, four lawyers, they get together, they put a firm together. None of them have ever practiced. And there's not a lot of people out there to mentor them. I think it's a good idea for training. I think the rough part's going to come when you look at how you're going to implement funding for that statewide when, and here's my little plug, you know, we can't get funding done to fix the roads. So that's going to be an issue. I think that's going to be how do we fund
it? Clearly, that is in circulation. We want to thank both of our guests. Again, tonight's forum on mandatory minimum sentences starts at 7 p.m. at MSU's Broad Art Museum. Judge Hugh Clark, Jr., MSU Criminal Justice Professor Chris Smith, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.